Welcome back to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Americans have more leisure time than ever before, yet we use very little of it for good old-fashioned play. Kids intuitively know how to play. They're creative, flexible, and simply lose themselves in the moment without having a goal in mind. But adults are purpose-driven in their leisure activities. Cooking, gardening, even video gaming are all outcome-dependent pursuits, not open-ended and carefree as play can be.
Our next guest has made a career of studying the role of play in human development. Gwen Gordon has worked with the MIT Media Lab, won an Emmy for children's programming, designed and built Muppets for Sesame Street, and is currently producing the documentary Seriously, a movie about play. She joins us to share the science behind the health benefits of play, physically, emotionally, and intellectually.
Welcome to Take Care, Gwen Gordon. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, a lot of people think that they play, but they may really not be playing. How do you, as a person who studied play and playfulness, how do you define play?
I love the idea that you might be thinking you're playing, but no, here's how you play. So there's actually a lot of dispute. One of the hardest things play scientists have done is try to define play, but we can kind of agree on a few categories of behavior. One is that it's intrinsically motivated, so it's totally volunteer. It doesn't have a utilitarian function, so we're free to play. We don't know the outcome of what we're doing, and it's outside, most agree it's outside of ordinary life, so it's framed as play, and that it's fun.
What about studies that show that play has positive physical effects on the body and mind? What kind of studies have been done? I didn't know that you could be a scientist and a researcher of play, but you are. So what can you tell us about the actual health benefits of play?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because there is a field of study called play science. And play scientists come from multiple disciplines because we play in almost every area of life. So there's the anthropology, there's the neurosciences. What we have found is that the benefits are myriad. I mean, it's almost as if we've discovered like a superfood of behavior, the kale of behavior, if you will. That because benefits are physical, psychological, emotional, social, and play is so fundamental to our development. It's almost strange to call it something specific, but we now know in early childhood that play is critical for helping us navigate the complexities of social relationships, understand ambiguities. You know, when we rough and tumble play, we navigate, you know, what does this really mean? What are they saying? And all that practice really helps us develop a more complex and nuanced ability to deal with social relationships, which is central to human life. One of my favorite theories about play is that it's really like training for the unexpected because life is full of uncertainty. So it's uncertain physically. When we play, we're trying things out. We're surprising ourselves. We're learning different moves. We're kind of intentionally tripping and trying because it's more interesting and fun to do something that is novel and to be ambushed and to chase. So our bodies are getting practice developing through the muscular physical coordination to have a wider repertoire of physical responses while also moving, you know, like all the benefits of any physical exercise or movement when we play physically are available to us. The bottom line is that play keeps us from rigidifying. It keeps us flexible, open, and aware of a wider environment than we would be normally if we weren't exploring it. Every species basically does better. You know, when they overly specialize or rigidify, they can't adapt. So we're more adaptable. So that's a high level. You know, in general, when we are more flexible, like our psychology hasn't rigidified, we enjoy life more. Our positive affect, as we know now, happiness leads to all kinds of health benefits. You know, just 10 minutes of laughter is equal to, I think I could be off on this, but something like 20 minutes of running, jogging. Immune system is happier, you know, when we're not stressed, and play is a great stress reliever. So we've seen lots of science, those rats that have been studied, exposed to stressors, recover more quickly if they had a playful childhood and if they're around after the stressor has occurred, if they're around other playful rats so that they resume play, they have a stronger immune system and survive longer.
Okay, in terms of playfulness and flexibility, I've got to be frank, Gwen. It takes a certain kind of mind to say play, the kale of behavior. I mean, I think that indicates a certain creativity. So the question is, maybe it's a chicken or the egg thing. Are you creative because you are playful, or are you playful because you're creative?
Yeah.
Which comes first?
Well, creativity does not occur without play. So we start out in the world, our brains are forming, and they're forming through the attuned play with the primary caregiver. They're like, we're getting stimulated, we're getting goo-gooed and gaga-ed in this like call and response love dance with mom. And our dopamine-mediated channels create a pleasurable response out of this kind of stimulated play. And the play opens a possibility. It's experimenting with anything. It's attuned, and it generates the creativity. It's like the novel response. By playing, we open the possibilities, and some of them are creative and others aren't, but play is a condition for creativity.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And we're playfully having fun with Gwen Gordon. She is our guest today. She's a pioneer in the field of transpersonal play. She's worked at the MIT Media Lab, won an Emmy for children's programming, and is currently producing the documentary, Seriously, A Movie About Play. And I want to talk specifically about what types of play. I want to hear examples. And are some more beneficial than others, or is it just what you personally enjoy the most?
Personal enjoyment is critical. And there are so many varieties of play. I mean, that's one of the interesting things about studying plays. What does gambling have to do with soccer, have to do with putting on a play, have to do with chess? It's really different forms. And the most important thing is that you enjoy it and that it's engaging. You're actively involved. So passively watching somebody else perform or resting on the beach, you know, while wonderful, wonderful things, you're not getting the benefits of play. The kind of play that's most beneficial is, I think, the kind of play that has the most complexity, that engages you physically, socially, and intellectually. You know, if you can do that all in one, like jump out of an airplane with a group of people and make up a poem midair, fabulous. That's an extreme example. But I see social play as inherently complex because, you know, you have less control over what's happening. You've got a lot of other factors. I think a shared game, I also think games that don't have winners and losers. So my preferred play is improv, whether it's theater or dance and movement, because I think there's just a tremendous amount of attunement socially. You're following your own impulses. You're adding to something creatively. It's open-ended. It's non-competitive, so you're building on each other. So that basically the rules change as needed. And so the more complex the play is in that sense, the more it increases our own complexity.
I wanted to ask about that because one of the tenets of improv is it's always you accept and you build. So it's yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes there tends to be, as adults when we play, we really think we play sports and there's an agenda. The agenda is to win. The agenda is to be better than everybody else. That's not really part of play.
Well, it is. James Carse, a philosopher, created the distinction between finite and infinite games. And finite games have winners and losers. The rules are rigid and the game ends. Infinite games, the rules change as needed, everyone's included, and the whole purpose of the play is to keep playing. And what's interesting to me about this is that finite games can exist inside of infinite games, but infinite games don't exist inside of finite games. So a finite game is simpler. It can still be play, but it can more easily be less playful. So there's a really important distinction. Of course, playfulness is an attitude that's lighthearted, that's more open, that doesn't take itself seriously. And we can often, as soon as there's a goal, we can get pretty darn serious and competitive. And sometimes the lines blur, and if, you know, if your whole identity starts getting at stake and your early childhood sneaks in and like all these, you can become like a really unpleasant player because you're treating it like real life and everyone's like, hey, it's just a game. But it's a simpler form. And one of the conditions for play is that we need to feel safe. And sometimes the rules help us feel safe. So board games can be easier to play when we know what's expected of us and if there's a winner and loser. So we might actually get the benefits and joy of play, you know, with any kind of game. But anything can become non-play if we start taking it too seriously and confuse it for real life.
That's why I want to follow up. As you mentioned, not everyone has the personality to be able to suspend and let go. And not everybody listening might even view themselves as playful. But because you're mentioning health benefits of play, we might, you know, try a little harder to incorporate it into our daily life. What other things can people do so that they can experience the type of playfulness that you're talking about and maybe expand on it? How often would they have to do it to get these types of benefits? And what are some other examples that people might incorporate into their life?
Yeah. So I'll just start by suggesting that as soon as you feel like you have to do it because it's good for you, it's probably not playful. So my bottom line suggestion is that we notice the impulse to play and we not stifle it. And that can happen at any point. You know, it's sort of like noticing, oh, my body is getting stiff. I've been staring at the computer for too long. Maybe it'd be nice to stretch. And then you go, no, got to finish this sentence. So the first guidance I would give is to listen to those impulses, like take a break. If your body wants to move, move it. Take off all that focused energy. So it's really take more breaks, little play breaks, move your body, and then feel the joy of that. I like to call it following your non-addictive pleasure. I mean, there's lots of kinds of pleasure that aren't playful. But if you follow the non-addictive pleasure, you're likely to find play, your form of play, that's healthiest for you. You know, once those channels start to get open, then you get a little feedback loop and it reinforces itself. In fact, organizations that are the healthiest, that rank the highest, best places to work, so people get to initiate their own play with each other. But it really changes how they function during the day. And it's the same for us as individuals, that if we start the day with some form that reminds us that we're free, because play is not a specific activity, it can be how you do anything, starting the day, finding what would be playful for you is a great way to start. But then I would certainly add to not relegate play to the end of the day and to weekends because you've worked hard and now you're going to play hard. It's really about incorporating it and having play breaks with other people. When I worked at Muppets, at 4 o'clock every day, we would all take out noisemakers. And it was just a kooky moment that took us out of our intensely focused state, and it was like a break that connected us to each other, reminded us we were humans that love to play.
Well, thank you very much for giving us a very playful interview. Gwen Gordon is a pioneer in the field of transpersonal play, and she's currently producing the documentary Seriously, a movie about play. Thank you so much for your time, Gwen.
Wonderful to be with you. Have a playful day.
For more information on Gwen Gordon and the power of play in our lives, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org.
On next week's show, your aging parent's been diagnosed with a terminal illness and needs your help in making end-of-life decisions. An emergency room doctor who wrote the book on how to get doctors to listen gives us tips on how to navigate the medical system and get the answers you need. Plus, a New York Times health reporter explains why a brisk walk is better for your health than a leisurely stroll.
Thanks for spending this half hour with us. If you have any questions or comments about today's show, email us at takecare@wrvo.org. This episode of Take Care is also available as a podcast on the WRVO website. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
And until next time, take care.
The information presented on Take Care is offered for educational and informational purposes only and should not be construed as personal medical advice. You should consult with your personal physician or caregiver regarding your own medical care. Take Care is a production of WRVO Public Media, written and produced by Lorraine Rapp and Linda Lowen, edited and engineered by Leah Landry. Catherine Loper is executive producer. Support for Take Care comes from the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York.